sometimes you just, I find myself, I don't want to be down there with the tricky one.
Talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. What is this? The 16th of September, a Tuesday. A big day on Wall Street. Yesterday was a really big day on Wall Street, and from now on, for the short term anyway, it looks like we're going to have a lot of very interesting days on Wall Street. Does seem as though the economy is in trouble. I may be somewhat, I don't know, hesitant here talking today. I'm going to have, I shouldn't discuss this with all of you, but we may be having a technical nightmare here today. Those of you who are computer savvy know what it's like to have a computer crash, and we had just that happen just last night here in our studio, our main production computer. So we're trying to get everything back up and running the way it ought to be. So if you hear a little snafu here and there today, perhaps you'll understand just why it happened. So we'll do the best we can anyway. One of those things where you have everything set up and you're used to moving A towards B and back, and it just becomes very automatic, and all of a sudden everything's different. And so it may be a problem today. It may not. Who knows? But problems, what do I know about problems? I guess the employees down at Shearson Lehman and Merrill Lynch and AIG, those are the folks that have problems, I guess. Big problems, the people that are employed there, except for the fat cats at the top, of course. They never seem to have problems, even though companies go belly up. They leave with anywhere from, in this deal, $22 to $60 million. You run a company into the ground, and you get rewarded for it. And, of course, we've got crazy people out campaigning on our political campaign, and I think you know what I'm talking about now, absolutely crazy people that say... Well, let me quote Herbert Hoover back in 1929. Herbert Hoover was quoted in 1929 as saying, "The economy is fundamentally sound." The economy is fundamentally sound. That's Herbert Hoover in 1929. And we have Herbert Hoover McCain yesterday saying the fundamentals of the economy are strong. The fundamentals of the economy are strong. Well, well, well. And then later he changed his words and said, well, what I mean is worker production is strong and our entrepreneurship is strong and all that. Worker production would be very efficient and very strong if people had jobs to be efficient and productive at, if they had anything to produce anymore in this country. The guy must have lost his tiny mind. Strong, the economy, after what we've seen over the weekend and what I know you've all kept track of with AIG and Lehman and Lynch, still AIG up in the air. I see stocks at the moment. Let's see where they're at the moment. Today's been a crazy day. The market was down about 175 points in, I don't know, the first 20 minutes, and then it headed back up again. They waited all day long for the Fed to decide that they're going to lower interest rates. Everybody predicting doom and gloom if they did not lower interest rates. And so they met this afternoon and they announced maybe, what, a half hour ago that they were going to keep them where they're at the Fed rate of 2%, and the market went up. So go figure. If anybody can figure this out, let me know. Let me know why gold isn't $1,200, $1,300 an ounce now, the way the economy is going in the state that we're in, and not just here, but around the world. Other countries around the world, major countries are having around the world are having great difficulties economically as well. Great Britain is, for one, is now they're having a mortgage meltdown, and with the big banks, the big groups, actually not a bank but an insurance company that really is a bank as well, AIG. You know, they have their tentacles spread completely around the world. So if American banks get a cold, the rest of the world sneezes, as that old saying goes. But this has been amazing politically. I know you've all watched the Palin-McCain ticket, and I do mean it that way, the Palin-McCain ticket out talking about the economy's good, and we're going to do that. Aren't you tired of this? On both sides. And I do mean that, on both sides. Aren't you tired of it? Well, I'm going to create jobs, and I'm going to put America back in. You know, we're going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and do this, and we're going to get people health insurance, and we're going to make sure Social Security is. Hey, and speaking of Social Security, what would it be like right now if Social Security had been privatized the way the Bush administration wanted to, hooked up to this tenuous stock market that we have now? What would this be like? How many million people would be jumping off bridges, committing suicide, wondering, knowing that their Social Security was going down the tubes, if they'd privatized it the way they wanted to? That was one of the craziest propositions ever put up. But the Palin-McCain ticket out telling everybody that the is strong, don't worry about it. Yes, we're going to give you jobs, and Obama too. We're going to make sure we get jobs, good jobs in this country. We're going to bring manufacturing back to the country. We're going to do this. Anybody, any of the candidates want to spell this out for me exactly how they're going to do this? I'm really tired of hearing campaign rhetoric, aren't you? How about to those of us who have brains enough to understand what you're going to talk about, how about sitting down and spelling it out specifically? And I know that you have in one way or another through your spokespeople and on websites and all this and that. But wouldn't it be good to sit down, Barack Obama, and buy a half hour of time or an hour of time on a major network at night? I mean, we've raised a lot of money. And just spell it out to the American people what exactly it is that you're going to do. Be specific. Here are the programs that I will put out. Here is my tax program so that the Republicans can't go around claiming he's going to raise taxes on everybody again. Just sit down and spell it out. Have a Roosevelt fireside chat with everybody and have a few charts and graphs if you need to explain it to everyone. It can be done. That's what the American people want to know. We don't want to have another campaign with sound bites. Oh, please, not another campaign with sound bites. And that's the way it's going back and forth now. And I understand when you're attacked, you feel the need to answer the attack. But maybe a little Ross Perot deal, you know? Get your pointer out and your placards out and explain things to people so that everybody won't be confused. We hear Palin and McCain, the Palin-McCain ticket constantly out on the stump telling everybody, oh, Obama and all their spokespeople, telling everybody how they're going to raise taxes. Well, the fact is they're not going to raise taxes on hardly anybody that makes less than $250,000, and he has spelled that out specifically, but I think he needs to go before the public and really lay it out there. I would be very, very happy to see that. Very, very happy to see that. And the, of course, the big banking industry seems to be in serious trouble, and we'll be talking a lot about that today. I think the events, of yesterday on Wall Street just might be the long-feared cataclysmic meltdown that'll finally wake up the comatose American people from their 28-year slumber. There are a lot of corollaries when you look back at history, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk about today. I was talking with my friend Tom Deegan about it, and Tom had some thoughts on it as well. But 76 years ago, on the eve of the election that sent Franklin Delano Roosevelt to the White House, Herbert Hoover got the following kind of, I guess you'd call it cheeky telegram from an unnamed citizen, and it said, vote for Roosevelt and make it unanimous. And by that time, the Great Depression, which was unleashing such horrible economic times across the American landscape, was already 3 years old. We had been in the Depression 3 years already, and it's not as if the stock market had crashed less than 2 months before. We've made many references to the Black Tuesday and the campaign of 1932, but there are some parallels here that are really too numerous to ignore. And that there are some analogies that are just crying out to be made if you really know your history. And with all this happened in the last 24 hours, you'd think that Barack Obama would receive a major boost in the polls. And we shall see whether that's true or not. But recent weeks have seen he and John McCain in a virtual dead heat, McCain pulling ahead a point or two and back and forth, and the so-called pundits have come up with dozens of reasons why this would be so, totally ignoring the real and the only reason, in my opinion, and you've heard me say this many times, and I'll stick to it till the day I die, McCain is white and Obama is not, and it's as simple as that. But to say in front of the American people that the fundamentals of the economy are strong is idiocy. It's lunacy. And any other adjectives like that that you can stick onto it. I get this creepy feeling that when a politician in 2008 probably inadvertently paraphrases Herbert Hoover from 1929, it's generally a good idea just to fold up your tent and go home for a nice long nap. And I've just been waiting for this poor old guy to proclaim that prosperity's just around the corner. Herbie Hoover did that quite a lot. And when some of the largest and oldest financial institutions in the country collapse overnight, like a house of marked cards. I mean, how many of you knew that the layman, how many of you knew that was coming? How many of you knew AIG was going down the drain? It's like a house of marked cards. And to even imply that someone's economy, our country's economy, is fundamentally strong, kind of reminded me of the story about Hitler and Goebbels in April of 19. And don't get excited. I'm not comparing anybody to Hitler and Goebbels here. I just wanted to tell you a story. There is the story that Hitler and Goebbels in April of 1945 had a regular party down in the bunker on learning about the death of FDR. All the while, the Allies were up above pounding the hell out of the city of Berlin, about 100 feet away from them, and they were just clueless about it. It is an awfully good time for a little reality check, to say the least, and that's what the Republicans are faced with right now. So this morning, McCain is interviewed on Morning Joe with MSNBC, and he made the statement, Wall Street has betrayed us. And he's only half right. It was also Ronald Reagan who betrayed us. That's right. St. Ronald of Reagan betrayed us. And it was both Bushes who betrayed us. It was the Republican Party that betrayed us. And most assuredly, it was also John McCain who betrayed us. It was the orgy of deregulation, which was supported and enabled by McCain from the moment he came to Congress in 1983. That brought us to this point. Anyone who would deny as much hasn't been paying attention. And let me also claim for the sake of fairness here that Bill Clinton had a hand in that as well, albeit not as big a hand as the Reaganites. And it's curious that people who tend to vote for the right-wing candidates have absolutely no understanding of American history. They couldn't. They just couldn't. And I'll prove it to you. Ask all of your conservative friends the following question. Some of you don't think history is important. If you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. If you don't have a good understanding of history, history is important. For everybody that slept through history class, it's not necessarily to know what went on 100, 200, 500, 1,000 years ago. It's not that. It's that you might learn from the past. You might learn something so that you don't repeat the terrible mistakes that have been made in the past. And that's why the right-wingers evidently have no knowledge of history. And like I said, ask all of your conservative friends the following question. Who was the president during World War I? Ask them that. I mean, to most of you, that doesn't sound like a very difficult question, does it? We're talking history 101 here. I guarantee that most, if not all of them, won't be able to answer that question. And it's a simple question. Try it sometime. For all of you that are Fox News listeners, it was Woodrow Wilson, okay? And here's another question you can ask him, and this one really is a no-brainer. You might be embarrassed to even ask it, but what was the name of President McKinley's Assistant Secretary of the Navy who resigned his position, put on a uniform, and went off to lead a brigade in the Spanish-American War? Well, I've given you the hint there now, but they won't know the answer. You can give them this hint. He later served as McKinley's vice president. They won't know the answer. Give them a third hint. He became president on McKinley's assassination back in 1901. I guarantee it. Most of them will not be able to answer this unbelievably basic question of American history. And again, for you Fox News fans, it was Teddy Roosevelt. And I'm not saying this that because I think everybody ought to be a history major, okay? I think everybody ought to have a rudimentary knowledge of history so that you can see what went on in the past. And when we have parallels, that we can make analogies and draw parallels from the past and understand what's going on now and maybe prevent some of the terrible things from happening again. And if our conservative brothers and sisters had so much as a remedial knowledge of the history of this once great nation, they would know the answers to those questions. And they would also know that every time this plutocracy, as the loony right wing was called in the good old days, every time that the Republicans have seized control of all three branches of their government, they ran this country right into an economic ditch. And that is not my opinion, folks. That is an undeniable historical fact. Look it up. Every time Republicans have gotten control of all three branches in the government, they drove the economic automobile of America right into the ditch, right off the road. And now, to the surprise of no one with a freshman history major's understanding of the past, our monetary systems are once again falling apart. And during the campaign in 1948, Harry Truman, referring to that good-for-nothing Republican 80th Congress, pointedly asked his fellow countrymen the following very, very pertinent question. And asking it like only Harry Truman would. How many times do you have to get over the head before you realize you're getting head over the head? It's a damn good question. And so now, because of the ignorance, the American people are in the process of relearning a lesson they should have learned nearly a century and a half ago during the administration of Ulysses S. Grant. And that lesson is this. Conservative philosophy of governance does not work, period. It never has, it never will. And so there's a whole bunch of our conservative friends sitting here right now. Well, what about Ronald Reagan? The economy did great under Ronald Reagan. Well, let me refer you to the late Lloyd Benson, one-time Secretary of the Treasury of the United States. And I thought Lloyd was always good for a good quote, had it right on the money when he said, and let me quote him, "You give me $4 trillion in hot checks, and I'll give you one hell of an illusion of prosperity." End quote. And yet, given all of the recklessness of the Reagan administration, John McCain was able to say yesterday with a straight face that America needs to return to the fiscal responsibility of the Reagan era? Oh, and all the Reaganites are sitting there, oh my God, he's attacking Ronald Reagan again. Let me tell you something. So reckless and irresponsible has this Bush mob proven to be, McCain was able to make that incredibly stupid comment, and no one so far has called him on it. Everybody's afraid to say anything about St. Ronnie of Reagan. He drove this country, he started this country on the path to ruin, Ronald Reagan did. And as I said before, it was only when the right wing seized control of all three branches of the government that they were able to ruin the economy. Reagan never had a Republican majority in the Congress, and his party only had control of the Senate for a few years during his reign of error. But back then, the Supreme Court was much more moderate than it is today, and sooner or later, the people in this country are, I think, bound to recover from their positively dysfunctional love affair with the twisted legacy of the Gipper. The truth is, everything George W. Bush has done to you, Ronald Reagan tried to do to you, and would have done to you had he had control of both houses of the Congress. That is a fact. And what has to be understood is that Ronald Reagan was essentially a mask with a twinkle in his eye and a nice Irish smile. You remove that mask and what's revealed is that hideous smirk of George W. Bush. That's the real face of the Reagan Revolution. And folks, it's time to wake up. It's time to wake up America. We're about a half a step away from the point of no return. And yet we have people even considering voting for more of this? I can understand those who might say, well, I'm gonna consider it. I'm gonna look at both sides. My God. So now where do we find ourselves right now? We've got John McCain and Gidget asking and expecting the American electorate to commit economic suicide by sending to the White House the very people who are responsible for the mess that we're in to begin with. I mean, isn't that lovely? Just imagine what would have happened to this country had the people stupidly reelected Herbert Hoover in 1932, and that's basically what we're looking at right now. We've got Junior Herbert Hoover Bush in office and his right-hand man, John McCain, and people are thinking about putting him in. So, you know, please, sir, may I have some more? Think about that. Think of what would have happened to this country back in 1932 if the people would have put Hoover back in. Let me tell you something. It'd be a very different world today. And if you don't believe me, you remember it was the right-wing Republicans who wanted to appease Hitler in the 1930s. Can you imagine what this planet would have been like today had those people been in power in 1939? I get ill just thinking about it. And I ask the question, do you or a loved one depend on a monthly Social Security check from the government? Who do you think you have to thank for that? Newt Gingrich? No, it was the very liberal, not progressive, the very liberal Roosevelt administration. In 1935, when that program came into being, every single conservative commentator in the print and electronic media, without exception, and I defy you to find me anybody that was an exception to this, every one of them predicted that it would result in the ruination of the United States. Now, honestly, do we really want the ideological heirs of those jackasses to retain control of the executive branch of our government? As someone once said, you really need to be careful what you wish for. And while, as some people are suggesting, that this might merely be a temporary glitch in the market and everything will be back to normal in a day or two, what happened on Wall Street yesterday is an ominous sign which should give every citizen of this troubled republic pause. Everybody needs to have a big old turn left at the next election sign on the back of their car. We've got no other choice. And if you think I don't know what I'm talking about, then fine. Then vote for John McCain and Sarah Palin on Election Day. And if you do, you deserve everything that happens to you in spades. I don't think things will be back to normal in a day or two. And given the reins of power in this country to the Palin-McCain ticket, this country won't be back in track in a year or two or 10 years. They have shown what they're about. They've shown what they stand for. They've shown how they recognize the troubles of this country. Our economy is basically strong. The fundamentals of our economy are basically strong. Folks, only a fool would say that. Am I accusing John McCain of being a fool? Yeah, basically, I guess I am. Because you would have to be a fool to say, to go on national TV and make a statement like that. All you would have to do is to get in your car and take a trip through, I don't know, Ohio? Drive up through Akron and Youngstown and Cleveland? Drive on over to Detroit, drive on over to Gary, Indiana, down to St. Louis, even to where I live and a lot of other places too, to Scranton, Pennsylvania, to Phoenix, Arizona. Cities all over this country. And just stop and talk to people. Stop and talk to people and ask them how they're doing. Ask them how their job is going. Ask them if they lost sleep last night because they're either losing their job or are worried about losing it. Ask how many of them that their unemployment insurance has run out, that their health insurance has run out. They've got kids in school. They've got no insurance. They've got nowhere to turn if the kids get sick. And don't give me that crap, oh, you take them to the hospital, they'll always take it. It's not true. How many elderly people in this country are dying every day or getting much sicker because they can't afford the medicine that they need to have? They're in that donut hole right now. How many people are dying in this country because they can't afford medical procedures that would save their lives because they don't have the upfront money for it? And yet, you want to put the reins of power back into the hands of people that believe everything I just said is, so much bullshit. They don't care. They don't care. Do you think a man with 7 houses and a wife that made him what he is today and will live rich for the rest of his life? Do you think he gives a damn what happens to you? Do you think a woman that just had a tanning machine installed in the governor's mansion in Juneau, Alaska, gives a damn what happens to you? I'll tell you somebody that gives a damn what happens to you. A man that was a community organizer. That's something the Republicans made big fun of. Oh, he was a community organizer. You know why he was a community organizer? Because he was out helping people. He could have gone straight to Wall Street. He could have gone to a prestigious law firm and made a ton of money. I think if you've heard him speak, you know that. You know he's a man of great intelligence, and you know he could have been a great lawyer. He could be rich by now. He could be very rich by now. But instead, what did he choose to do? He chose to be a community organizer and go help people one-on-one in poor neighborhoods in Chicago. That's a man that cares. That's a man that really cares about people. So you can give me all the BS you want to about community organizer. That showed me one great thing about Barack Obama. And he's the first guy that's come up in a long, long time that I've looked at and listened to and felt that I see from the very depths of his soul that he's interesting in helping America. He's interesting in helping you, people in your class in America, every color in America. That's what he's interested in. I've gone on long enough. If you'd like to call, please do. 866-546-5254. I thought I'd play some music today. Representative of the 1930s.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower up to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly down. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember? I'm your pal. Say, buddy, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, ah, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, And I was the kid with a drum. Oh, say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Yes, a very popular phrase back in the 30s, late 20s, actually late 1929 and throughout some of the 30s. Brother, can you spare a dime? A lot of people. And I hope that's something we never repeat in this country, but it could happen. And so far, I think there are indications that it very definitely could happen. I worry about it. I do. And I hope other people are sufficiently worried in order to make a difference in this next election. If you'd like to call the program today, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Don't know what happened to the chat room today, but evidently it's either not functioning or nobody home. I don't know what the deal is with that, but we have a good audience today. I thank everybody for that. As I've been mentioning, and we'll talk mostly about this today, the big banking industry seems to be in real trouble, and their stockholders might actually have to take a real hit instead of being bailed out like some of the others previously, and I'm all for that. But on the other hand, when you look at it, there are a lot of pension funds that are involved in some of these takedowns. A lot of pension funds. Which is a sorry statement for America. I wish somehow the people who had money in the pension funds could be separated out of this, but we've had enough government bailouts, most certainly. I certainly feel that way about it. But we've talked a lot about the manipulation of the market for insiders for a long time, and we haven't had a chance to prove our point about it so utterly dramatically until now. And I wonder if you can follow me on this. Anyone from an Econ 101 student right up to somebody with 30 or 40 years experience on Wall Street knows that the market sometimes gets massaged or pushed one way or pulled another for the benefit of a small group of insiders who can control the market by many different methods. But now we can all plainly see what I believe is actual evidence of illegal manipulation that ought to send several busloads of these Wall Street people to prison. It should, but it won't. And I'm sure you all remember a few months ago when oil got up to almost $150 a barrel, well, gas prices went through the roof, and Americans started suffering mightily. Everybody I know did. And the standard of living for the working man and woman diminished even further than at any time during the past several decades. Wages are stagnant, prices going higher, paychecks going lower. It was really a bleak outlook. And still is. Well, the price of oil wasn't going up because there was a shortage. I think most of us understand that now. It was going up because of some of the speculators, and now they've been caught red-handed with it. The rumor started on Wall Street that the price would make it up to $150 a barrel, and we even heard predictions of $200 a barrel. Well, the speculators went nuts, and sure enough, prices rose dramatically because of speculation. Because of what should be illegal speculation. But where did these rumors come from, and why were they being spoken? Well, it's very simple. The big brokerage houses were holding billions and billions of dollars of oil futures contracts. And because of the huge losses they were taking on housing mortgages, that's a story I don't need to tell you. They needed to keep from looking like they were going belly up, at least on paper. They were insolvent. So they were trying to hold on to things until things got better in the housing market. So they pumped up the value of their oil holdings to make it look like they were solvent. They started the rumors. They started everything going on Wall Street. Oh, my God, there's a shortage of oil. We better bid it up. And they did. They got it bid up nice and high, and they could keep their good ratings and continue on to rape and pillage the American public another day when foreclosures dropped off and things got better. The trouble is, things didn't get better. And so Americans started using less and less oil, and the price started dropping, and it left the brokerage banks like Lehman and Merrill Lynch exposed to the truth that they really were insolvent. They really didn't have the assets to offset the massive write-downs that they're having to take on their real estate loans. So they finally got caught in their little pyramid scheme that had worked for so long. Greed did them in. Their stockholders didn't have to worry, though, because according to Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, they were too big to fail. How many times did we hear that? The feds would bail them out. Well, guess what? The feds passed on the deal, and now the stockholders of the companies are going to have to take a loss, a huge loss. And a lot of people are going to take losses. The executives will probably not be worrying much about paying their light bills, but thousands of their employees are going to be out of a job, and Wall Street is absolutely panicked over the whole thing. It all goes to show that we've been getting screwed by the fat cats for decades now, particularly Republican-backed fat cats like Phil Graham, who just happens to be the financial guru for John McCain. It doesn't take a genius to show to know how John McCain feels about all of this, whose side he's on, especially knowing his friend and financial mentor Phil Graham led the fight for deregulation of the financial institutions and less oversight. These people are thieves. They're worse than all the famous bank robbers put together. And when you think of some of the famous names, John Dillinger and Pretty Boy Floyd and Bonnie and Clyde, and other famous people who robbed banks and even killed people while they were doing it. But I wonder how many folks have died because they couldn't afford life-saving medicine or medical procedures because they had to take a choice between eating or buying those things. And I wonder how many suicides have been caused by the terrible worry and the stress put on people by these financial wizards of Wall Street who had the blessing of the Republican deregulation proponents like Phil Graham and John McCain. I wonder. Let me tell you something. These policies have killed a hell of a lot more people than the bank robbers ever did. And they did it right out in the open. Will they suffer on account of it? No. They won't. They will not. They hardly ever do. And yet we have millions of people thinking about putting a Republican back in the Oval Office. Thinking about having Junior Bush keep the chair warm until Johnny McCain gets in there. And so he can continue on. And hey, let's face it. Let's be honest here, okay? Let's be brutally honest here. I never liked Junior Bush. I never liked him from the first time I heard him open his mouth. And I didn't think that much of his dad either. I didn't think his dad was as bad as the boy. And I never liked Jeb either. Better con man never lived than Jeb Bush. Never was there ever better a con man than Jeb Bush. A guy that's had his fingers in so many illegal activities and still is on the outside of the bars. I don't understand that. But anyway, that's the way it is. But as bad as I thought Junior Bush was, I don't think that he ever was as bad as John McCain. And let me tell you why. Junior Bush is from a wealthy family. Not as wealthy, I don't think, maybe as McCain. I don't know the answer to that, really. They're both, the Bush family is very, very wealthy. I don't know if McCain's got more money than them. Cindy McCain's got more money than the Bushes or not. It'd probably be a toss-up. I really have no idea. But I never really thought that Junior Bush set out to screw people. I thought he was just plain dumb. And maybe that's because of my ignorance about him before he was elected. I could attribute some of that to ignorance of him. I had a cursory knowledge of him, like a lot of people, but not as much as maybe I should have. But John McCain, on the other hand, we've known for 20-some years that John McCain had no compunction about taking money for quid pro quos in the United States Congress and Senate. We know that. And I'm talking about the Keating Five. And he can stand and complain all he wants to about the Keating Five and get his little pals to come out and say, oh, Johnny got a bad rap in the Keating Five. Johnny was in that up to his ears. And if you don't know that, ask Deacon Cini, Senator Deacon Cini. If you really, really study the Keating Five, you will see that John McCain, well, traveled back and forth. His wife and kids traveled back and forth to Keating's luxury mansions, place in, what, Bermuda or the Bahamas. I don't know where for sure. I can't think of where it is for sure. Went back to his luxury villa and was flown back and forth. And do find out that John McCain paid for none of those trips, none of them, until years later when the public found out about them. It was clearly illegal, it was clearly unethical. That's the John McCain that really exists. And so he would have you believe that he went on this great campaign, this great crusade, since he'd been mixed up in something like that, like, I'm going to straighten up and I'm going to be a great crusader for all that's right and good in the United States Senate. And he gets a hold of Russ Feingold, and Russ, with good intentions and all that, they put in the Russ Feingold, the McCain-Feingold amendment about campaign financing. When it comes right down to it, doesn't amount to diddly squat, and everybody knows it. It did absolutely nothing to keep money out of the political system, illegal money out of it, and too much money out of it. It did nothing. But now we would have McCain lead us to believe that he was this great crusader for ethics in Washington, D.C., that he's this outsider. And I laugh every time I hear him say, well, we're gonna reform Washington, Sarah Palin and me. We're going to reform Washington. John, reform it from what? Reform it from what you have made it all these years? If it needs reform, weren't you part of the problem? And oh, it does need reform. But there's nothing in your background, there's nothing in your platform or plan that shows any evidence that you're willing to do that at all. There's nothing that, especially looking at your campaign staff, which is almost, 75% lobbyist, corporate lobbyist. Would that lead anybody to believe that you're thinking you're going to reform anything, having almost nothing but lobbyists on your campaign staff, running your campaign, your major consultants and confidants? Your bona fides as the United States Senator does not include any disdain for working with lobbyists. You're good at it. So it confounds me as to how anybody could be taken in by this business of John McCain. It really does. It confounds me how anybody could be taken in by this. I'm fascinated by it. I really am. And yet, once again, we have millions and millions of people out believing what this man says. Going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
just whistle while you work. Put on that grin and start writing. Whistle loud and long. Just hum a merry tune. That'll beep, 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 beep. Just do your best and take a rest. Sing yourself a song. When there's too much to do, don't let it bother you. Forget your troubles. Try to be just like the cheerful chickadee. And whistle while you work. Light up, get smart, tune up, and start. Whistle while you work.
Ah, yes. Whistle while you work. You know, it's getting hard to do that these days. Getting very hard to do that these days. Getting hard to have that nice attitude you ought to have when you go to work, you know. Thankful for having your job and all that sort of thing. Well, it's getting a little rough, isn't it? When you don't see that paycheck stretching far enough. When you see those benefits diminishing each and every time a new contract comes up and all. When you see your 401 taking a dive, when you see your little stock portfolio, if you're with companies that pass out stock, when you see that diminishing. And believe you me, there are a lot of people at Merrill Lynch and Lehman Brothers who got a lot of their pay. And I'm not talking about the big fat cats either. I'm talking about some of the people in regular jobs that some of their pay was always figured in with stock in those companies. And imagine what that stock's worth now. Well, you've seen what it's worth. Practically worthless. So a lot of regular Joes and Janes out there losing their jobs on Wall Street, and it's going to be a rough ride. Today is not indicative of it. Still, I see the market is up currently, as I have it, 147 points, which is a complete surprise, and that's a good thing. I'm glad it's up. But it's also very difficult to understand with the Fed coming out today and saying that there's not going to be any cut in interest rates today. The big boys, particular AIG and others, were planning on interest rate being dropped, so it would make it easier for them to get the cash influx that they need. It's going to make it all the more difficult for them now. So I guess the Fed is very serious about not getting involved in some of these. 866-546-5254. I did see that the McCain, the Palin-McCain ticket, split up yesterday. Did you see that? Palin-McCain ticket split up, and they went their separate ways yesterday. And so Johnny Boy McCain, he heads to Jacksonville, Florida, and he held his first rally without his running mate, Sarah Palin, and let's just say there were seats available. Now, I read a story here from the New York Times. The McCain Road to Victory rally was originally scheduled to be a pancake breakfast, but the campaign said there was such an outpouring of enthusiasm. The event was shifted to the 15,000-seat Jacksonville Veterans Memorial Arena. Well, that might not have been the best idea. There were almost no supporters in any of the cavernous arena's 24 upper-level seating section, and only 8 of the 21 sections downstairs held any fans, and only 4 of those were filled, although some of the supporters crowded around the stage on the arena floor. McCain and his wife were making a point of thanking supporters for coming out on a Monday morning for the 9 a.m. rally. How embarrassing. Here's a guy running for the presidency of the United States, and now he finds out that no one really gives a damn about him, and we all know that the conservatives never really did give a damn about John McCain in the first place. And he's been campaigning with Sarah, and they've been getting nice crowds, and all of a sudden he's out by himself, the candidate, not the Veep, but the candidate. And do remember, they've been reminding us of that because of our comments about Sarah Palin and the problems that she's having and had because of her obvious ineptitude and inexperience. Don't forget, it's John McCain running for the president. Don't forget, it's John McCain. Well, here he was, the candidate out, and hardly anybody shows up, and all of a sudden he's got to figure, hey, it ain't me they're interested in at all. It's Sarah. So now they're back campaigning together again. McCain said he had a soft spot in his heart for Jacksonville because his first wife and his children awaited his return from a Vietnamese POW camp at a nearby naval base. The years I was away in prison, the people in Jacksonville and Orange Park took care of my wife and children, McCain said. McCain noted the sharper criticism of him that's been coming from the Democratic rival Barack Obama and his running mate, Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware. He said it didn't bother him. Friends, and don't you hate it when he starts out every sentence, friends, Senator Obama's been saying some pretty nasty things about me and government, Governor Palin. That's when he gives you the phony smile. McCain said, that's okay. He can attack if he wants. All the insults in the world aren't going to bring change to Washington, and they're not going to change Senator Obama's record. And then he came up with a new formulation that allows him to resume his war against congressional earmarks and keep Palin in the mix. He said last week that she had not asked for earmarks as governor. In fact, he said that several times, that she had not asked for earmarks as governor, something that's just plain flat not true. In fact, she hired a lobbyist and asked for $256 million in projects her first year in office. And in the current fiscal year, her second, she's seeking $197 million. And so now McCain's had to change his tune. And now he's saying, well, every year she's been in office, Governor Palin has cut the request. And so the two of them are getting back together today. I guess maybe we won't see them separately anymore, or maybe not see McCain out by himself. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't be wise at all to be out by yourself if you're him right now. That's got to be very, very embarrassing. Very, very embarrassing right now. We're coming up to the top of the hour. Got a call here, but I think I'm going to ask the caller just to call back again. Wouldn't be able to get anything done here in a minute or so that we've got coming up. So we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Any hopes that the Boeing strike would be solved in the near future were dashed this weekend as the company's president and chief executive, Scott Carson, said he expects it to be a couple of weeks before the two sides can get to a place where they are willing to sit down and start talking again. Workers represented by the International Association of Machinists have been on strike against Boeing four times in the past 20 years. The last strike was in 2005. This time, the big issue surrounding the negotiation stalemate is job security. The union wants to have a larger voice when it comes to the outsourcing issue. The union is seeking the right to bid on new work that is presented to Boeing. Language formed in a 2002 contract has tied the union's hands, so it can only bid on work that existed prior to the contract. Another worker on the shop floor is writing a book to be published this year about a militant and inspirational event in labor history that has the power to inspire today's workers. Doug Cunningham has more.
In the winter of 1937, thousands of Flint, Michigan auto workers seized a GM factory in a sit-down strike and held it for 44 days against police onslaughts as the National Guard reined the plant. That bold act of courage and solidarity won recognition for the UAW from the world's biggest, most powerful corporation. Martha Gravatt works on the shop floor in UAW Local 122. She's writing a book to be called In Our Hands Is Placed the Power. It's about the heroic Flint sit-down strike.
It's the kind of story that can inspire us to fight the companies today as they continue to chip and chip and chip away at everything that we fought so hard to achieve. Our class, the working class, we just have to be willing to fight. We have to draw that kind of inspiration from these workers who just put it all on the line. About a week or two before the strike ended, the workers that were sitting down sent telegrams to Governor Frank Murphy, and they said, "We are not leaving it. And if you intend to shoot us out, our blood is on your hands, but we are not leaving. We're determined to fight this out to the end."
Here is today's economic report. Americans aren't confident about their retirement as the economy continues to take a downturn. According to the Principal Financial Well-Being Index, only 42% of current workers believe they will not have to worry about financial matters once they enter retirement. In contrast, 61% of current retirees feel that way. Only 53% of current workers believe they will have a retirement that is at least as affluent as their parents.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1. Or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped out. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, thanks for being with us here on the Guy James Show today. I appreciate your being there very, very much. And I hope you'll decide to call into the show today. Very, very quiet here in the Guy James studio today. 866-546-5254. Yes, do give us a call. We're basically talking about the economy and politics today, so what else is new? That's what we talk about just about every day. But the economy very much in the news today, and Wall Street very much in the news today. I see now the latest news off of Wall Street that that the feds are considering a loan package for AIG. Well, 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 that's coming from Bloomberg.com. Feds are considering a loan package for AIG. They originally said they would not do that. So, and they have left the Fed rate at 2%. They haven't changed it at all. So, that's the latest from Wall Street today. The market, let's see, where is the market? I think the market, well, let's refresh this and see what exactly the market did today. It ended up, I believe, ticker showing us at 141 points. Is that right? Wow. The way it started out didn't look good at all on Wall Street today. I got a story out of the Scotsman newspaper, foreign newspaper, of course, but just to show you how rough it is at the top. Let me just quote the story. The former masters of the universe will never know what it's like to live in a subprime home. By the end, 62-year-old Fold was Lehman's biggest individual stockholder. Despite the crash, he stands to leave with about $65 million based on Lehman's Friday morning stock price of $3.73. This tally includes 8.6 million unrestricted shares worth some $32.1 million as of Friday morning, though they had been worth $582 million last November before the credit crunch hurricane struck. Chuck, I'm still dancing Prince left Citigroup with a package said to be worth $40 million. He also received a pension of $1.74 million and another $1 million in stock options, which were worthless, basically, at the time of his departure. Merrill Lynch's Stan O'Neill spent much of last summer perfecting his golf swing. Confident that his trusty lieutenants at Merrill could avoid those subprime bunkers, it turned out to be a bad call. He was ousted last October as the first waves of the credit crunch struck, with a retirement package reckoned to be more than $160 million. Jimmy Cain, 15 years at the top of Bear Stearns, was said to be on the golf course in June 2006, just as the bank dropped the first of many clangers with a 10% dive in profits. Worse followed, with the bank having to put up $3.2 billion to try and rescue its imploding hedge fund. By mid-March last year, when the bank collapsed, Kane, who would rush from Wall Street by chopper to the private Hollywood Golf Club in New Jersey to play 18 holes before dark, man, had already relinquished the reins, handing over the chief executive's role to Alan Schwartz. When Schwartz went cap in hand to the New York Fed for a $30 billion bailout, Kane was said to be competing in the North American Bridge Championship in Detroit. Kane and his wife sold their 5.6 million shares in Bear Stearns, worth as much as $1.2 billion in January 2007, for a mere $61 million at the end of March this year. The couple recently bought two adjacent apartments in New York's plush Plaza building for $28.2 million. He left with a $30 million golden goodbye, enough to do up his Park Avenue property and a mock Tudor mansion in Greenwich, Connecticut. That's how tough it gets at the top of Wall Street. Isn't it amazing that this kind of thing goes on, that the stockholders are okay with that, that the boards of directors at these outfits are okay with that? And really, what it is the foxes are running the chicken house. The board is filled with the foxes, and the investors, many of them, just regular people, pension funds and all, who the hell cares what they think? Why would you care what they think? They can just, you know, who cares? Who cares? Doesn't matter what they think. We're going to get our golden pension funds and all that sort of thing. I'll tell you, the past 8 years have really constituted the fastest, most complete reversal of fortune in this country's history. And you better remember that one party controlled the government for almost all that time, and Obama, Biden have been handed on a silver platter one of the starkest policy debacles ever, and just weeks before an election. And if they don't hammer the White House and the Palin-McCain ticket and Republicans every day for this, they really deserve to lose. And if voters don't think change is needed, they deserve whatever the Palin-McCain ticket gives them. I'm just astonished that some of these things go on. I really am. This guy's so desperate to sit behind the desk in the Oval Office that he's willing to be second banana on the ticket behind a rookie governor with PTA experience. And I'm not cutting down PTA experience. That's very important. But I think when you're a governor and you've got that on your resume, I think your resume is a little light. And seriously, I think he'd be willing to be second banana to Wile E. Coyote or maybe Elmer Fudd as long as he got to be president. I really think that's true. Yeah, well. And I saw an interesting story today. I just had to clip this and bring it to your attention. We've talked a lot about the evangelicals here lately. We always do, it seems. This is from the Religion News Service, so it's not a bunch of atheists that thought this up. A new poll released Thursday finds that nearly 6 in 10 white Southern evangelicals believe torture is justified. Now, ain't that just ducky? 6 in 10 white Southern evangelicals believe torture is justified. Well, well, well. I do find that interesting. I really do. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. 866-546-5254. You know, we're in a recession. And when it comes down to it, except for that pathetic excuse of a stimulus package, everybody getting their $300 or $600 bucks or whatever it was, boy, that really helped the economy, didn't it? And seriously, did it help you? Now, I know there are people that need $300 or $600 to keep going, but did it help a lot of people? I don't think it really did. Help Walmart, probably. Lord knows they need help. But we're in this recession, and really Washington isn't doing a thing about it that I can see anything meaningful. And according to recent survey research, that's one of the most powerful arguments that liberals can make right now, that Washington is sitting by while Rome burns here. And the White House says we've avoided a recession, but Americans overwhelmingly disagree. And people that, you know, they describe the economy as in recession, and they support an economic growth package for a good reason. We lost 51,000 jobs in July. That's the seventh straight month in which more jobs were lost than they were created. We lost, another 84,000 in August. So we've lost over 500,000 jobs this year so far. The unemployment rate is up to 6.1%. That's the worst jobless rate in a long time. And now we've got over 9 million Americans unemployed, out looking for jobs. 1.6 million lost their jobs in the last 12 months. And even for those who still have a job, companies are cutting workers' hours. I know many, many people in this boat that have had their hours cut, and you have to maintain a certain number of hours in order to keep your benefits, and therefore they cut them just under the benefit level. Many people, many places have a limit of 30 hours a week where you've got to get to in order to keep your benefits, so they cut you down to 28 hours, therefore not having to pay benefits, and they just get more people to fill the hours. That's going on. That's rampant across the country. Places you would never think would be cutting jobs. Grocery stores. Drug stores. Major drug stores. Major grocery stores. Cutting hours for people. And, weekly earnings grew at the lowest rate since 3-4 years ago. But costs are rising a lot faster than wages. Americans are really struggling to make ends meet right now, and all the while we've got big oil chugging along. Nobody even willing to talk about a windfall profits tax on them. And we've got John McCain out saying Barack Obama's going to raise your taxes. And I'm not, of course. I'm going to cut them. I'm John McCain, and I'm going to cut your taxes. Sarah and I will cut your taxes. Think of all that extra dough you're going to have in your pocket. Won't it be great? Well, folks, I got news for you. All he wants to do is re-up the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. And it's not going to amount to squat for the average American. Definitely not. We're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Staying with our theme today of playing music from the Depression era, here's Barbecue Bob.
Mighty song to sing you, and it's no excuse. I've got a song to sing you, and it's no excuse. And it sure is the devil, I believe God of you. You want to drink a little, you think it's awful nice. When you want to drink a little, and you think it's awful nice. You put your hand in your pocket, and you ain't got the price. You heard it by the job. Now you is on your way. You heard it about a job. Now you is on your way. 20 minutes after the same job, all in the same old day. Hard time, hard time. We got hard time now. Hard time, we sure got hard time now. Just think and think about it, we got hard time now. You started in mooching, but your mooching been plain. You started in mooching, but you're mooching in vain. Be careful with yourself, you'll get a ball and chain. Lard and bacon, under a dollar a pound. That lard and bacon, under a dollar a pound. Cotton have started to selling, but it keeps going down and down.
This is not America.
David Bowie, This Is Not America. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us. You may call the program by giving us a jingle at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. You know, there are so many anecdotal stories surfacing about people having such difficult times during this tough economy, and this collapse of Wall Street certainly is not doing anything to help. But we run across so many of these anecdotal stories. I wanted to share a couple with you about a gentleman named Bob Emily. And he put in an honest day's labor every day of his life. He said, I work for the railroad, for the town marshal, security, bars, Sealy down in where he lives, UPS. 82 years old and from Commerce City, Colorado. He said he worked hard all of his life until he got sick, and then the bills started piling up. And you're hearing this increasingly with older people. Hospital bills built up, said Emily, who didn't have health insurance. I had to get loans to take care of my bills. Then I was getting behind on the loans. Every day, more calls and letters would come in from creditors and collectors. I just got tired of it, so 3 months ago, he filed for bankruptcy. It's a man 82 years old having to file for bankruptcy. You know, that might take some of the pressure off, and then again, it might not. Food prices and medical costs are still going up, tarnishing what's supposed to be the golden years for the elderly, perhaps the hardest-hit victims of this slumping economy. What do you do if you're on a fixed income right now? And elderly Americans, according to the AARP, are filing for bankruptcy in record numbers. That's a sad, sad commentary on the American economy, isn't it? It ought to be a decent time. And yeah, I mean, yeah, you get old and you get infirmed a little bit with this or that, but you've worked all your life. It ought to be a time when you can sit back and enjoy what little time you got left in peace and comfort. You don't have to be rich. Have enough to eat. Have the medication and the medical care that you need. Is that too much to ask? Is it? Record numbers of elderly filing bankruptcy. And at the same time, support's drying up from meal transportation and other home assistance agency that can't pay their own bills. A big story in our home paper here the other day about how some of the charities are having a very, very difficult time meeting their needs. In fact, they're not meeting their needs. And there's just, Mark Kitchens, who's a senior vice president of the AARP, said there's no question that the downturn in the economy is dramatically impacting those at the doorstep of retirement and those who have already decided to retire. But over 1 million Americans who filed for bankruptcy last year, nearly a quarter of them were 55 and up. And AARP found that bankruptcy filing amongst those from 75, ages 75 to 84, skyrocketed by 433%. And halfway into 2008, a little more than halfway, workers at agencies that serve the elderly say the problem is just getting worse. They're getting more and more calls from seniors looking for jobs every day. Said Peggy Clark, director of a job bank run by Positive Maturity, a senior agency in Birmingham, Alabama. And she goes on to say, plus their age is higher every time. We're talking about people in their 80s who are saying they have to go back to work, even if it's part-time. I know people in their 80s who are still working. Shouldn't be. But they are somehow. And I know a couple of people in their 80s are very, very healthy, very, very able-bodied, and still want to be out working. I know others that don't want to be out working. They barely can, but they must in order to have enough to eat. And the bankruptcy hotline, operated by Utah Legal Services, a nonprofit support agency, pleads for help pour in from seniors in debt. intimidated by persistent calls from bill collectors. They're calling in because they want to file for bankruptcy, said Sylvia Bozen, a spokeswoman for the agency. Some of them think they may go to jail. Only 21% of employers offer supplemental health coverage to retired employees enrolled in Medicare, according to figures from the AFL-CIO, making government and private senior service agencies crucial to keeping America's elderly clothed, housed, and fed. But those agencies are buckling, hit by the same double whammy of higher costs for food and fuel. More than 2,000 Meals on Wheels programs nationwide have waiting lists because it's too expensive to deliver to all who need it. And when a Meals on Wheels program closes down, who feeds those people? Who does? A lot of these folks, it's a life and death situation. And let me give you an example. In Honolulu, where Meals on Wheels delivers to 700 elderly people a day, the number of volunteer drivers is down about 20% because drivers can't afford the gas for their trips. And the agency's 50-cent-a-mile reimbursement doesn't begin to cover expenses, and as a result, the agency estimates drivers now spend more than $300 a year out of their own pockets, and they're losing a lot of the drivers because they can't afford to do it anymore. And if they can't get drivers, seniors won't be getting their meals. Older adult transit services in Columbia, Missouri is trying to keep its services affordable for the 30,000 rides a year it provides to grocery stores and doctor's offices. But gas prices are making it tough to hold the line on its $3 a ride fee. That's one story after another. And, you know, they go on to say retirement, what retirement? Retirement plans and government benefits must provide for average life expectancy reaching 20 years longer than they did in the 1930s. But inflation and stock plunges are eating away at retirement accounts. So people are living longer and trying to do it on less. And I know, there needs to be planning done for retirement. A lot of people have planned for retirement, squirreled away all their lives, done what they can, and lost. You look at some of the situations we've had in the past few years with the likes of Enron and now Lehman Brothers and Lynch and others. Very, very ugly situation. And my heart goes out to the seniors every day. The more of these stories I hear. I ran across just a brief story, and it has nothing to do with anything else we've talked about today, but I did want to mention it. As you know, Dick Cheney is one of my, if I had a list of most detestable people in American history, I think Dick Cheney would probably be at the top of it. I can't think of anybody a whole lot worse than him. Public servants I'm talking about here. We've had some murderers and so forth that are a little worse. But Cheney turned down a request to oversee the Katrina recovery because he doesn't do touchy-feely. Just after the Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast in 2005, Vice President Dick Cheney refused Junior Bush's request to head up a cabinet-level task force aimed at speeding the recovery effort, writes the Washington Post Barton Gellman in a still-embargoed section of his new book, Angler, the Cheney Vice Presidency. When asked by Bush if he would, quote, at least go do a fact-finding trip for us, Cheney responded saying, quote, that'll probably be the extent of it. Days after the storm had passed, when he finally returned to Washington from Crawford, Bush assembled his senior staff in the Oval Office, and he was going to set up a cabinet-level task force, he said. I asked Dick if he'd be interested in spearheading this, Bush announced. Let's just say I didn't get the most positive response. Bush nodded ironically toward the vice president, putting on a show for the others, Card, Rove, Bartlett, Condi Rice. His expression, the tone of voice, had a hint of edge. Can you believe this guy? Well, will you at least go for a fact-finding trip for us, Bush asked. And Mr. Cheney said, That'll probably be the extent of it, unless you order otherwise, Mr. President.
Well,
I think we've all always known that Dick Cheney ruled the roost there and did what he felt like doing and not anybody else, so there you have some proof of it. Some Sarah Palin interesting things come up today. Aren't you getting tired of having them whine about the coverage she's getting in the news? I mean, we don't know who she is, and she's running for the nation's second highest office, and she's running on family-related issues. But you can't ask any family-related questions to her. For example, if Obama had five kids, including a special needs newborn and a pregnant teen daughter, that would be an issue for him, too. And Palin also opposes contraception, opposes abortion without exception for rape or incest, and advocates abstinence-only sex education. So it's fair to see how these positions are playing out in her life. And why is she running for VP when her children need her now? Well, that's not a question that makes a whole lot to me. I know many women who have a career and raise kids. But, you know, these lies that they keep telling and keep repeating. I'm hearing them over and over again. They haven't even stopped the Bridge to Nowhere thing. They go on and on about it. They still are keeping up with I Sold the Jet on eBay thing. They've tried to twist them around the best they can so they don't come out to be such lies. But, hey, a lie's a lie, you know? Do you have a lot of reasons to vote liberal this time around? Do you have some reasons to vote for Barack Obama instead of the Palin-McCain ticket? Do you have some good solid reasons, or are you just, I'm a liberal and I'm going to vote for them no matter what, or my dad was a Democrat, I'm going to vote this way, or I like his looks, I don't like them. I'm voting for Obama because he's the lesser of two evils. What are your reasons for voting for Barack Obama? And I think there are many reasons to vote for Barack Obama this year. And number one, I think everybody needs to sit down and figure out what's at stake here. And I'll just say it up front, and I've said it all along, and I know many of you agree with me, that voting for John McCain would be a monumentally stupid idea and it would be a tragedy for this country. Number one of the things people just don't think of enough in presidential elections is the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is really on the verge of a complete mental breakdown, and what you've got at the moment are four right-wing extremists against five moderates, and the next president will make at the very least two appointments, maybe even three. And John McCain has already said more than once that as president he would appoint activist conservatives to the bench. And you can read that to mean reactionary kooks, because you know, if you want more Scalia's on the bench, you want more Roberts on the bench, you want more Sam Alito's on the bench, you want more Clarence Thomas's on the bench, you just put John McCain in there, you see what happens to the Supreme Court. And another reason to vote for Barack Obama. It isn't one of the top reasons, I don't suppose, and I'm not going to give my reasons in any particular order, but John McCain is 72 years old. And he's not in the best of shape. And it might seem to a lot of you that that's really a cruel thing for me to say, but if this situation calls for anything, it's absolutely brutal frankness. And the law of averages absolutely forbids his not passing away between now and January 20, 2012. You know, just keep saying it to yourself over and over again, President Sarah Palin. I can just picture the movie, Gidget Goes to Washington. Well, I don't think any of you want that. And I don't think anybody even on the Republican side that would sit down and think about it and put their brain to that point, I don't think they'd think it was such a great idea to have her. Oh, she's not running for president. She's just running for vice president, so don't worry about it. That's been the answer so far. And I think most of us by now are just completely sick of the GOP. The 111th Congress is going to be overwhelmingly Democratic in both houses. We're going to pick up 15 to 20 seats in the House and probably maybe six in the Senate, maybe seven. And well, we're going to throw out Lieberman. I hope to God whoever the Senate Majority Leader is this time around, if it's Harry. God, I hate to think of more of that. But they got to get rid of Lieberman. Just tell him where to go. Time to go sit with the Republicans. And if the American people are silly enough to elect the ticket of Palin McCain to head the executive branch of their government, they can really expect 4 years of stagnation and stalemate, because that's what they're going to get. Democrats will control Congress. And we've got McCain out there just going on and on and on about this Maverick thing. I laugh every time I hear that. We got a senator who's voted a full 90% of the time on the side of the worst president in this country's history. And I can think of a lot of things he maybe should be called, but Maverick isn't one of them. And, you know, we had David Broder, and what the hell has happened to him? He made the absurd statement that John McCain is an anti-establishment reformer, and that his choice of Sarah Palin as his running mate only proves it. And I think David Broder must have been drunk when he wrote that. There was a time when he was one of the better writers out there, and I had respect for him, but it's almost like he's getting serviced by somebody on the McCain campaign. John McCain, anti-establishment. I think that's a real hoot. And now we've got McCain trying to take over the mantra of change. And you have to wonder, how the hell are we expected to believe that the Republican Party is going to clean up the mess that they've made? They have made. And the very idea of these people in charge of the military for another 4 years after the absolutely catastrophic mistakes of the last 7.5 years is really too depressing to even think about. And don't forget, John McCain thought that invading Iraq, the worst military blunder in American history, he thought that was a great idea. And don't forget, he would also invade Iran and Syria and even been throwing darts at Russia lately. And he still never admitted his error on that, still never admitted it. Well, it was a good idea, we just didn't do it right. Do remember that 3 months before the invasion, Barack Obama was already on record as being against it. And the Republicans still want to talk about judgment here. Well, that's absurd. What's really been going on for the last 7 years is that the extreme right wing is purposely trying to bankrupt the American economy so that they'll have an excuse to do away with the social safety nets that so many of our fellow Americans depend on, some of which have been in place for over 70 years. Big government, you know, 4 more years of Republican rule might very well sound the death knell for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and God only knows what else. So if you or a parent or grandparent depend on a monthly check from the government, from funds you've been paying into your entire lives, you really ought to be seriously alarmed about this. And if you're not, you're just not paying attention. And one of the other reasons I think you have to vote for Obama, that you should vote for Obama over McCain, is just the phrase President Sarah Palin. That's enough right there. That is enough. And, again, it might sound cruel to a lot of people, and I've been criticized for saying before, but it's got to be said, John McCain does not have the psychological temperament to be the President of the United States. We've had many of his mates in the Air Force, his compadres, talk about his explosive temper. People that work with him in the Senate talk about his explosive temper. Some of the outbursts he's had toward his own wife, the names he called her in public. He's threatened his colleagues, including threats of physical violence. All of that's legendary. And there have been times during the campaign when he seemed to be on the verge of senility. You know what I'm talking about. When McCain, when Lieberman's standing over his shoulder saying, no, it's Shia, the Sunnis. And McCain didn't even know what he was talking about. And this is the guy we want to negotiate with Vladimir Putin? I mean, to hell with the drink. I need something stronger than that. And one of the other reasons you don't want to vote for McCain is Secretary of the Treasury Phil Graham. Think about that. Seriously, look at what the Bush mob has done to this country. John McCain has said repeatedly that he has every intention of continuing their policy. And how's it going to look to the rest of the world if we go down this road again? We're going to look like a bunch of crazy people. And indeed, we would be crazy people, not worthy of good leadership if we put John McCain and Palin in. And as I've said more times than I care to think about, not since 1932 has the need for this country to go in a new direction been as pitifully obvious as it is in this year. So consider all the reasons that you need to vote for Barack Obama. And if it turns out that all you need to do is vote against John McCain, well, that'll do as well. But we cannot allow this country to jump off a cliff and do that again with a McCain. We're going to pause for a break and be right back.
All the good books say it ain't right, steal and kill. country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every being. Your creed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot.
Hey, thanks for being with us here today on the Guy James Show. Always good to have all of you along with us today. Just ask an interesting question on the chat room. Atho asked, how long before someone asked about reinstating the draft? And, of course, I wrote back, do you think John McCain would answer that question right now? Have any of you, and if you have heard that question, ask, we'd like to know. I can't imagine John McCain giving a straight answer about that. I really, when it comes down to it, maybe... I was going to say maybe no politician would answer that, but then again, I think Obama, if you ask Obama about a draft, he might say no, hell no. McCain, I don't know if McCain would answer that right now. Hey, did any of you see that Carly Fiorina on the one that's been around talking so much lately? Carly Fiorina is a campaign consultant. She used to be head, what was it, head of Hewlett-Packard. She was asked straight up whether or not Sarah Palin could run an organization like Hewlett-Packard. And here was her answer.
Carly, I have a minute. I want to ask you a question about experience. Somebody who has worked her way up from a secretary to run Hewlett-Packard. Does Sarah Palin, John McCain, obviously thinks she has the experience to become president of the United States. Do you think she has the experience to run a major company like Hewlett-Packard?
No, I don't. But you know what?
That's not what she's running for. She's not running to be head of a large corporation. Hey, I got news for you, Carly. She's running to be head of one of the biggest corporations on Earth, if not the biggest corporation on Earth. That would be the United States of America, and I know I shouldn't call it a corporation. But what an idiotic statement. To be asked if Sarah Palin could run a company like Hewlett-Packard, well, no. No. But she's not running for something like that. So that's really an idiotic response to that, really a non sequitur. But Carly Fiorina, she's been just about every place lately, and she's good. I mean, it makes you wonder. Some of the ones that have, the ones that have been on lately, the talking heads, the... all those that have tried to speak up for and then they said well, it's just silliness. It is really, really and truly just silliness. It makes you wonder if they take these people into a room someplace and say, okay, here's what we're going to talk about today, and do not stray off of this. And if you're asked this question, never answer it. Is there a course for this someplace? Is there? Is there a course where you take in order to be one of these talking heads and if, for either side, it doesn't matter. They go out and they throw out those talking points no matter what question they're asked to get their talking points in. And to me, it's embarrassing. I couldn't do it. Could you do it? I know they make a lot of money, but could you go out and just repeat talking points every day like a robot? You know, have that glazed over look in your eye and you're on Larry King or you're on with Matthews or you're on with this one or that one. And no matter what question you're asked, you've got a line ready for them, whether you believe it or not. It's hard for me to believe that someone like Carly Fiorina could really believe some of the things she says. That Poofenberg or whatever her name is, a lady with the foot long neck, that's been on all the time lately, a spokesman for John McCain. Really and truly, she couldn't believe most of the things she say. She just couldn't. But I wonder if someplace in D.C. they have classes for that when these people get on the campaigns, if they just go crazy with that. I don't know. But to me, it is embarrassing to watch some of them. I think, my God, how can you go out and prostitute yourself like that? It just seems like something I couldn't do, no matter what the money is. And ideologically, how could you even do it then? How could you? You couldn't believe in some of the stuff they talk about. You just couldn't. When they were out last week talking about John McCain and how he was trying to force sex education on kindergartners and all that, those people knew that those were lies. Of course they knew those were lies. But yet it was their job to go out and convince the public that they meant it, and that's really what he was doing. How could you do that? How could you do that from either side? I know I couldn't. I could not do that. I most definitely could never do that. But I guess we know there are people who can and who do. So it's going to be interesting to see what the rest of the week brings. What are we going to see with the stock market? What are we going to see with a possible bailout of AIG? What are we going to see on Wall Street the rest of the week? Will the market go up, go down? Will oil continue to plummet? And since oil has gone down to 90 bucks a barrel, why hasn't the corresponding gas prices gone along with it? It has not. We've had oil drop by what now? About 40%. Has gas dropped 40% in your area? That would take it down, let's say 40% from $4. That'd take it down to $2.40 a gallon. Is gas $2.40 a gallon in your neighborhood? No. Just give them a benefit of the doubt. Is it $3 in your neighborhood? Is it $3.25 in your neighborhood? No. So, once again, they've taken advantage of the situation. And I don't know the truth yet. I've tried to find the truth so far, what real damage was done to the platforms out in the Gulf from this latest storm from Ike. Here there were a few destroyed. I haven't heard of any major leaks yet, of any major spills. But as you all know from the last time around, we often don't hear about those things until quite a little bit later. So that is what happens with that. Hey, thanks for listening today. It's been a pleasure having all of you along with us, and always enjoy knowing that you're there. And thanks very much for your correspondence. I do the best I can to answer it all. Stay tuned for Mark Levine coming up next with the Inside Scoop. Mark's always got a great program for you, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director, and don't forget, you've heard from the radical right, now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.